The Bastard Executioner is over, but we are just getting started here on a brand new show here on Post Show Recaps. And now, here are the guys who are bastard podcasters in their own right. I'm Rob Cisminier. Here's Josh Wigler and Antonio Mazzaro. Guys, what's going on?
What's up, Rob? How you doing, man?
This is great. I've never been referred to as a bastard before in mixed
company. That is incorrect. That is false. I've podcasted with you quite a bit over the years, Antonio. I've been calling you a bastard this entire time.
You said I was a podcaster.
The podcaster?
Yeah. I thought that was a good thing. I was wrong.
All right. So here's what we're here to do today. This is the first show, show zero of a brand new podcast that we're doing here on Post Show Recaps. And that show does not quite have a name yet at this point. We're still kicking around a bunch of ideas in the writer's room. And it does not yet. We have not yet locked into anything. What do you like that? The writer's room?
Yeah, is that the name of the podcast?
Maybe.
I think there's already a show called The Writers' Room.
On IMC
with Jim Rash.
Damn. Okay. So anyway, so that's what we're here to do is every week we're going to be here, maybe on Blab, probably on Blab.
Currently on Blab,
at the very least. And we're going to be talking about whatever is going on that given week in the world of TV, movies, whatever else we feel like talking about. And we're going to be doing it, the three of us, every week. And we're going to hopefully hear from you guys quite a bit, too. And that's why we're here recording this on Blab. And next Friday, we will have our first show, our first episode one. This is like the test show, but you guys are hearing it here.
Yeah, we're testing chemistry right now. I don't know these guys very well, so I just need to feel things out with you two.
Yeah, we could be combustible elements. This could be bad news. This whole Blab thing could just blow up in our faces.
This whole thing could end in a fight.
It could. That'd be difficult. We're an opposite end of the country.
That people might like that, though. That
Twitter
might actually
war.
Be good. This is like a Jerry Springer type thing, right?
Okay. So if you're listening to the podcast version of this, we're recording this live on a new site called blab.im. It allows all of us to be up on the screen at the same time, and we can also bring in people that are watching the show live and hear from them from time to time. We probably are not going to be doing that very much, but maybe towards the end of the show, it'd be great to get some feedback from you guys. We could also bring in a guest, and you can see all four of us at the same time. And so here we are, ready to talk about a brand new premiere from this week from FX. The Bastard Executioner, the return of Kurt Sutter to FX. We're going to talk about that. Plus, Antonio is going to update us on some of the things we may have missed while Josh and I were busy rewatching every single season of Survivor.
Don't bring it up if we don't have to, please.
Too late, man.
I'm still hot stove.
And Antonio is going to tell us a little bit about what we missed this summer and then plenty more along the way. So what else? What else, guys? What else we need to set up here?
I re-listened to every song by the band Survivor, so we're good to go, right?
Yeah.
Did you record 300 hours worth of commentary on every single song?
I thought them up. I didn't reduce them to recording.
Yeah, we can do that.
What else, Josh? What else you got?
No, I think that's good, Rob. I think that sets up what we're doing here really well. I think that the idea is there's a lot of TV out there, a lot of shows. We missed a lot this summer that we want to be able to talk about at least a little bit scattershot-wise here. And then I think just moving forward, there's too many shows for us to be covering every single week, but we want to be able to touch on a lot of the big things. That sounds bad. The Bastard Executioner being one of them. Rob and I, you and I, we podcasted Sons of Anarchy in its final season. We podcast about Game of Thrones. Antonio gets in on that from time to time as well. This feels like a really perfect one to kick off with. So, let's cut into some TBX.
Yeah, and I'm really excited. This is, I think, the right time of year to be starting this because there's a ton of premieres coming on. There's a ton of fall TV. That's really, really exciting. So we'll be able to check in on different things that we weren't quite able to do before on post-show recaps. And then as movies come out towards December and stuff like that, we can check in on specific movies that we want, or if there's a show that's really good that we're missing out on, we can catch up a little bit and talk about it here. So lots of exciting stuff that we can talk about using this new platform of this unnamed show.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
You got to work on that. That's important.
So here we go. Teller Tuesdays, we're back. It was the debut.
Grandma.
I knew that Grandma would come into play immediately.
Welcome back, Grandma.
Yeah. So we had the premiere
Grandma
this week.
Looking good, by the way, can I just say? Not all the time, but at the end of the episode, pretty good.
Was that her? Was that really her?
There's no chance. No chance that was her.
I don't think that was her.
That's how Kurt Sutter sees her.
Yes.
what's important.
Yeah.
All right. So we had Kurt Sutter, who was the man behind Sons of Anarchy, stays at FX and brings over probably a lot of his team to work on this new show, which is The Bastard Executioner, sort of like Sons of Anarchy meets Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that feels like the high concept pitch. That feels like, hey, I got an idea. I'm the dude who does Sons of Anarchy and does horrible things to people on television every week. Game of Thrones does that really well as well. You don't have a Game of Thrones. Let me give you my Game of Thrones.
And on that sentence, FX said, okay.
Yes.
We're in.
So,
we're in. Well, you know, give us everything.
Sons of Anarchy was already Hamlet on wheels, so let's just do Hamlet on crack. You know, I think that that's kind of what he's doing here.
So, well, you mentioned the crack earlier with
James. I know, the juicy crack.
There you go.
There's a lot going on here in the 2 hour plus premiere of The Bastard Executioner. With this commercial's there, so it's probably about what, like 90 minutes of screen time altogether.
It's like 1,000 hours long. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on as we follow the plight of, I want to make sure I get the guy's name right.
Wilkin Brattle, dude.
Wilkin Brattle.
Chris Hemsworth.
You got to get Wilkin Brattle right.
Wilkin Brattle on his journey to become the executioner. Yeah. And there's a lot.
The Jack Teller of Westeros.
Boy, a lot of people died in this 2 hour premiere. By the way, we're going to spoil everything. So if you plan on still watching this and you don't want to be spoiled.
What's
the final word spoil in that instance? Are you going to ruin it for people? I think that there are
a couple of twists along the way. So if you are planning on still watching The Bastard Executioner, we will be spoiling plot points from the premiere.
But we have not seen
past the premiere.
What's the policy on Sons of Anarchy spoilers / Game of Thrones spoilers? You want to make a ruling on the field here, Rob?
What, you feel like you're going to get into Game of Thrones spoilers?
I don't know.
Let's not spoil Game of Thrones here. I think Sons of Anarchy spoilers are okay.
Okay, fair game. And I will be cautious with those as well.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like unless you need it to make your point, I feel like overall probably try to avoid it.
I'll alert. I'll send out the signal.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So overall, guys, what was your take on Bastard Executioner? Antonio, you want to start?
Yeah, I think that they put the bastard in the execution for sure, because I enjoy the show on some level, but Josh talked about how much TV there is to watch right now. It's going to be really tough to keep up with this one for me week to week, because I've seen a lot of it. I see it on Game of Thrones. I've seen it on Vikings. I've seen it on other shows that are similar. I didn't feel that there was really anything about this show that specifically stood out to me as great that I would. This is a unique show that I have to tune back in and watch. Kurt Sutter's take on this world. I mean, I've seen it in Braveheart as well. Like, this is, it seemed to me all to be stuff that we've watched. That said, it was a 2 hour premiere, like you said, Rob, probably 90 minutes or so of screen time, and I enjoyed it. I mean, I sat through the 90 minutes. I wasn't checking my watch and wondering when this would be over. I just didn't feel like it was bringing anything super new to the table, and I was a little bit confused by what was going on, especially at the beginning. So I would love to hear your guys' take. I mean, we have Wilkin Brattle here. He's some kind of soldier. He's fighting in a rebellion. He gets this vision from this sort of Khaleesi type
angel.
The angel. But he has to put down the sword and live a different life. And so,
yeah,
he realizes that's what he's going
to
do. And then
save the life of a different man.
Yeah.
Save the life. His compadre in battle, they both had the same brand.
His name's Brattle.
They died in Brattle. He touches his chest and a dragon comes out. What's going on there?
Yeah, that was weird. How did that look to you guys? That looked a little funky to me, FX-wise, and not just the network. I mean, it looked a little grungy, the dragon popping off of the guy.
Yeah, I feel like I wonder.
Looks a little phallic, dare I say?
I don't know. I wonder, is that like a difficult transition where you have Kurt Sutter, who just worked on a show in Sons of Anarchy for whatever, 7 seasons, probably not a lot of special effects on there outside of
explosions.
Yeah,
but he's fresh off of that super awesome final Raven thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right at the height of his FX game.
So, I don't know. This could be a thing where this is the first time he's getting into this. You know, there was something at the end of the episode where they told Brattle that they needed a man with the heart of a dragon. Was that a callback to whatever this vision was he saw?
I thought so. Yeah. And that's why I wasn't sure if I maybe missed something that was supposed to tie all that together. If there was some, because, I mean, the show is based on Edward Longshanks, the British imperialism and the British imperial rule of Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. And we've saw, like I said, that's the kind of the whole crux of Braveheart. There are a lot of similarities here to Braveheart. These are historical things that happened. So I wasn't sure if I was missing some historical piece.
This was a true story?
Dragonheart. Well, I don't know about Wilk and Brattle, but I mean, yeah, the Edward Longshanks stuff is definitely a true story.
So. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a great name.
Yeah, I mean, it is a good name, but it's just the whole thing. Like, there was all these heavy aspects of Catholicism that played in throughout, and a lot of discussion of that kind of on the kind of weirdest expanses and ranges of the show. Like, oh, is he Catholic? Or your other friend, is he Catholic? Like, that seemed like the subtext was very heavy. So I wasn't sure if subtextually that chest tattoo or brand was supposed to be something, and I didn't know.
Right. The dragon tattoo.
Right.
The band with the battle with the dragon
tattoo. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it pops off of this one guy, this dead corpse, and then it does this weird CGI flying through the air thing, and then he wakes up from his nap. He's got the dragon tattoo. So it would appear that this guy has an actual dragon in his heart, and I hope that he's paying royalties to Dennis Quaid.
Now, do you feel like in a world where Game of Thrones is so popular, Josh, if you were going to come up with the Game of Thrones killer, if you were trying to work out the formula for the show that was going to be the better version of Game of Thrones, is something like this what you would have come up with?
Ah, man, that's a really difficult question. I don't know. I mean, I think that if you're FX and you've got Kurt Sutter, who you've got a writing deal with, you've got him on a production deal. He loves working with FX. FX loves being in the Kurt Sutter business. Sons of Anarchy was super successful. People loved it. It was on for 7 years, 7 seasons, critically maligned a little bit along the way toward the end, I think. And it was never a critical darling by any means. But it had a huge fan base for the entirety of the run. It was their best show in terms of ratings. It was one of the most successful shows in the history of FX. So if Kurt Sutter is saying, I want to do something with fantasy, I want to do something with swords and sorcery, and I want Katie Seagal to be in there, I think that pretty instantly, if you're FX, you say thumbs up. Whether or not you're calling that a Game of Thrones killer, I don't know that there is such a thing. I don't know what a Game of Thrones killer would look like. I'd have to really sit with that idea first.
But just coming at it from a strategic programming perspective, if you were trying to take some luster away from Game of Thrones, how would you attack Game of Thrones? If you were trying to identify from people, well, what are the things you don't like about Game of Thrones? What are the things that you wouldn't watch about Game of Thrones? It seems like that they came in this, and it's almost like they had the premise of, well, we're going to out sex and violence Game of Thrones.
Right. It was like seasons worth of Game of Thrones in a single 2-hour episode.
However, they're still on basic cable while Game of Thrones is on HBO. So it seems like to me that is a battle that they cannot win.
I don't
it
know.
Will not stay.
Yeah. It will not stay. That battle is hollow. I think that we're not going to go full fronties. I think that that's out. I think that on FX, we're not going full fronties, but we're going to say bad language. We're not going to drop F-bombs, but they're going to say, you know, pardon my language, they're going to say shit every now and then. That's going to happen. You're going to hear that on this show. You're not going to get full fronties, but you're going to get full-on decapitation, which is the very final thing that you see in The Bastard Executioner in the first episode. You know, there's some restraint with at least, and here's a Game of Thrones spoiler from season one, there's restraint on a certain episode 9 beheading that you only really get to, you don't feel the full impact of in terms of the visual. You get to see a little bit of it, and it's mostly the reactions on everybody else. This was a straight up beheading. And if we know anything from watching the 400 hours of the final season of Sons of Anarchy, Rob, it's that Kurt Sutter knows how to do violence, and he knows how to make things really, really nasty, even on FX. I'm not worried about the graphic content department. If anything, I'm worried that it's going to be over the top.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You got some juicy butts. I know he's trying to do that, and it could be over the top. I think, Rob, you're onto something there. What I think is interesting is if you ask me, how do you kill Game of Thrones, or what's a show killer, or what's a way to kind of do it better, focusing on a smaller set of characters does help. I think that there are a lot of people that complain about Game of Thrones' expanse, how we're in so many different areas, and people can't always follow who was who, and people come back into the story that were in the story a couple of seasons before that. So it is interesting to me that sort of the show takes a really long time to get to the basic premise of the title of the show.
That's classic Kurt Sutter.
Where he ends up at what the Baron's kind of place there, or the castle, if you will.
But by
doing that, by ending up at the Shire, they've limited the amount of characters. We did have his little band of merry men. A lot of them got killed. A lot of characters that seemed like they should be bigger characters, by virtue of having weird scenes with those characters, were dead within the first hour and 10 minutes. And so maybe one of the other things they can do to be a little different than Game of Thrones is you have a similar milieu, but you just have less characters.
Right. That's a really good point. And from watching the Sons of Anarchy premiere, I binge watched all of Sons of Anarchy last summer. That was a different,
that was your evolution
a different
strategy,
summer to time project. So from watching the premiere of Sons of Anarchy, I do feel like they did a much better job early on of basically here are sort of the important characters in this world of, okay, here's Jax, here's Clay, here's Gemma. You know, they set up a couple other people. You know, you had Jax's ex-wife also there in the beginning. But I feel like that was a lot easier to follow who was who in terms of this. I really did feel like I needed that roadmap of who are all of these characters. And I have to say, I definitely was confused that I definitely thought that there was more than one character that I thought was the same person. And then
like
when
who? Give me some examples.
The Baron and the main villain, not Verlox, but
Vampire Bill?
No, Vantress.
Yeah, Vampire Bill from
Vantress. No, yeah. I thought that Vantress and the Baron were the same.
Ah. Well, Vantress and the Baron are the same.
That's the same.
Yeah. Okay. Ventress and the Baron. Baron Ventress.
Okay.
But you know what? It doesn't matter because, spoiler alert, he's dead.
Yeah.
it was very confusing for me. Like, I have IMDb open and I'm trying to follow along. And then all these people are credited as being on 10 episodes. I'm like, well, that guy's not dead. Well, that guy says he's in 10 episodes. He's not dead.
Right. I was very confused by that as well. Brian F. O'Byrne, who's the guy who plays Baron Ventress, he's been in a bunch of stuff. He was on the short-lived Flash Forward. He's got a great role in, I think it's the season 4 finale of Oz. Great actor. I love this guy. And here he is. It's like the Tywin Lannister of this thing. And I'm like, oh, so this guy's going to really be on the show. And then he just gets bopped in the back of the head halfway into the thing. Mm-hmm. That was a surprise. And on Wikipedia, he's listed as part of the main cast. So, I don't know.
Very confusing. Yeah. So, I apologize about that. But I did feel like that they really set this guy up to be like the main villain of the show, and they offed him. They also set up that it seemed like you were going to have Wilkins' wife as part of the show.
No, you knew she was dead, right? You had to know.
No, I didn't know.
You thought she was going to make it the whole way?
Well, I thought she was going to make it after she escaped. Yeah, I mean, I thought she's dead for sure, and then she gets that crazy face down with that guy, and I'm like,
brown teeth were the giveaway. They're not going to put the main character in a long-term, series-long relationship with the brown teeth lady. She's not going to happen.
She had brown teeth. Wow.
Yeah, tell us more of your rules of television.
It's just what it is. They need to loosen him up. They need to free him up. They're not going to marry him off to the brown teeth lady in the very first episode.
They look so happy, though.
They did look happy, and that was really terrible. That was too much. I mean, we've seen Red Wedding stuff like this before, but straight to the gut, real close up. It was gross.
Well, there was a couple of pregnant women that they killed off here in this. And I mean, this was a very violent, like nobody was spared. There were kids slapped around, kids murdered, pregnant women, unborn babies being killed. I mean, this was, they really got into it in terms of that. And I just don't know if this show has earned that yet in the first episode. I feel like that was a really crazy way to get into this
show.
Like
an episode one Red Wedding.
Yes, it was. There was a lot of, and I'm not easily offended, but I'm like, boy, they really are going for it here in episode one. And I'm not sure. It seemed like there was a lot of things in here that were just for shock value. Like, for instance, like when we had a scene with the Baron and another person, like literally wiping him. And then we have needed a shot of the rag also.
It wasn't like a dirty rag, was it? We didn't see the dirt.
It was dirt in the Tarzan form of the dirt. Yeah. So it did look like a dirty rag to me. I just thought that there was a lot of things that were in this pilot of really like, okay, well, this scene could be a little boring, but why don't we put it in here with something that is really offensive?
Right. And I think that this is, you know, I think that this is the Kurt Sutter thing. I mean, if you know Sons of Anarchy, if you know his work, you know this is where he comes from. You know, he likes to get raw, he likes to get dirty, he likes to get gross. It's you know what he's into.
And I think it's named a Dirt Sutter.
Dirt Sutter.
I'd be all for it.
I think that he's I don't know. I think that he's trying to do this thing. You hear it from the people from behind Game of Thrones a lot, which is like, well, realistically, people would be annihilated in this world. You wouldn't just get like stabbed through like the armpit and be like, and it's like a school play is how you're dying. If you're a pregnant woman who's about to be murdered in this context, like someone's going to do something awful to you. And Kurt Sutter's not the type to flinch away from that. So I think that he's trying to set the tone of what to expect from this show. I think it's going to be a hyper, hyper violent show, obviously, from this first 2 hours. I think he's not trying to ease into that. I think that that's the world he's exploring. The title of the thing is The Bastard Executioner. It is literally about a guy who gets paid to chop off heads or flay people in some cases, I guess. Yeah. So I think, he's embracing it right away, and either you're in or you're out. And I couldn't blame you if you're out.
Well, I had a question about that because, speaking to you guys with the Kurt Sutter knowledge, we had the actual executioner, not the bastard one, the one who ends up dead and who
the real Maddox,
who Wilkin impersonates, the real Maddox. Is there a scene? Am I crazy? Isn't there a scene with the real Maddox, like hurting himself, burning himself at the fire with his family there?
Yeah. He's doing something to himself. He was like the most compelling character in the whole thing. He gets completely ganked. A word from PG Law. He just gets totally destroyed.
So why is that happening? Why did we have that scene? Why did that happen? Just so we could set up that he has a lot of scars in his body in case someone could ID that later. Like, I don't know, his wife who's already in on the lie. Like, I don't understand this.
Yeah. What did you think about that, Rob?
I was like more interested in...
I almost would have preferred to watch a show about that guy.
That's what I thought we were going to get. I thought the show was going to be about him.
Not about Chris Hemsworth's secret.
Right. I thought he would be a character, but not the main one.
Yeah, I was more interested in why did his wife at the end of the episode go with it? Was she just like, she got a good look at him? She's like, upgrade. I'll pretend to be your wife. Sure.
I'm in on this.
Here's my new husband. Honey, you're home.
Yeah.
Why did she just go along with that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, because her husband was a jerk.
Greg Maddox.
Executioner douche.
Yeah. So, I guess so.
Yeah.
Why not?
I just didn't. I mean, I guess maybe that's why that scene was there of him being so crazy and punishing himself so that later on when his wife did get in on the lie, you would say, oh, that's probably why, because he was a crazy person. And now he's going to, this new guy is going to have to really uphold this weird semblance of family. So maybe I'm going to be better off. Like, that's the only reason I can think of why that scene was even in the show. Because otherwise, like you, Josh, I thought, well, this is a really compelling character. Why does he have scars all over his body? He's insane. What kind of person does this kind of job? And then he's dead.
Taken out so easily just by some kid who pops out of shrubbery.
Yes. Yes. An animal loving young boy. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would have liked to have seen a little more of that guy, or at least have maybe more of a meaningful death for that character. We also, it was Wilkin Brattle's wife's father just gets randomly just taken out in that big battle, right? I think that he's out of the picture as well at this point.
Yeah, they're definitely the grandfather.
Like, they didn't spend a lot of time on the people that they killed, and some of them seem to be meaningful characters and they're just gone.
Yeah, you had these brothers set up fighting over their dad's axe and who was going to wield them, and then the younger brother was killed just like that. But I mean, it's interesting. The premise now is that Wilkin Brattle is in the castle and only his kind of right-hand man is there with him. And the rest of those guys, whoever else was in his crew, the boy who loved animals, the friend that they were concerned about because he was a minority, the guy who was wielding his father's axe, all those guys are just kind of out there.
Right.
And we had Matthew Rice from The Americans popped up there as well, right?
Is that right?
Yeah, he was kind of the highwayman who was involved and brought in his 50 troops and said, I'm going to call back on that favor later. So it does set up this world with all of these characters, but yet it seems by the end of the pilot or premiere, we're kind of limited to just what's going on at the Shire there.
Rob, did you think that all of Wilkin Brattle's friends, that's the new Sam Crow?
Yeah, I thought that was like, all right, here we go. And then it's like this guy's Bobby. This guy is, this is the new Tig. And
well, the guy who's with him in the castle is the new Chibs, obviously.
Yeah.
He's like a Chibs Opie hybrid. I'm actually surprised that we didn't get. I thought that when they announced the show, I figured this is a great way to get Ryan Hurst back into the Sutter team, the guy who played Opie. I feel like he would have been great casting for Wilkin Brattle. I gotta say, I don't love the guy who's playing Wilkin Brattle.
What don't you love about him?
I don't know. I think that he seems a little softer than you want from that character. I don't think that he's got sort of the magnetic movie star charm that a guy like Charlie Hunnam has. He's plucked from obscurity. This is his first really big deal gig. I don't know. I feel like I don't see whatever spark Kurt Sutter saw in this guy. Not yet. Granted, it's only been 2 hours, but he's just not my favorite guy.
Yeah. And now he's going to have this crucifix scar on his face the whole time?
Yeah, don't you think that someone would have been like, that looks really fresh, as if like you just put that on your face just now to go undercover as a bastard executioner?
But he renews it every time his vows stray. So that's what he said. I mean,
so that's why
the exact same thing. Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. Like, this is so obviously a new scar on his face. Yeah.
Should we get matching face tattoos for this new weekly podcast?
Yes.
What should it be? And we want to put it right here, like a teardrop, right?
Oh, I thought you were saying you wanted it to be a marker, Antonio.
Oh, no, I have a marker at and I was hoping one of you guys would say we should do this. I'm ready.
Oh, you're ready to do it.
Oh, yeah, what is Katie Seagal's character's involvement in all this? She was part of this assassination of Brattle Jr.
Apparently.
Jr.
She's in the beginning of the episode. Anora is her name. She is giving them advice on like how to take care of the kin and is saying, oh, Wilkin Brattle, you take it easy. In 3 days, you're going to be hurting real bad. You got to watch that wound and all of this stuff. And she seems very, you know, maternal, and she's looking out for these people, and she seems to be relating to Wilkin Brattle because she hears the angel's voice in her head too. And then we see her in the cave with the mute sorcerer, who is also played by Kurt Sutter, if you didn't know that, Rob.
No, I didn't know that. That was him?
Yeah, that was him. And then all of a sudden she has like this like shockingly beautiful naked bum, and she's doing something with the mute guy, and we find out that she's got the dagger that they used to kill Wilkin Brattle's wife, and I don't know why she did that. I guess you just can't have Katie Seagal on a Kurt Sutter show without her
never
just being
her.
Secretly awful.
Yeah.
Seemingly maternal, I think, is what you just said, Josh. Yeah. I buy in on that. Like, but so were we meant to assume that she had the dagger and not the mute?
I think it doesn't, for me, it almost doesn't matter. They seem like a combo.
Yeah, I thought she put him up to it.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Just to go back to this idea of if you're FX, you're Kurt Sutter, and you're coming up with what's going to be the show that's going to be the better version of Game of Thrones. I also feel like another complaint that some people have about Game of Thrones is like, you know, I really liked it in the beginning, but now there's so much magic. Like, I really don't care about the magic in Game of Thrones. I feel like if I'm Kurt Sutter and I'm going to do this bastard executioner, I feel like I'm going to shy away from magic and the real fantasy element of this. Sorcerers, witches, dreams, all visions. And I think I would really stray away from that and go much more of like a Braveheart than Game of Thrones, or, you know, even like going towards the Harry Potter or any of these things that have sort of like this element of fantasy to it. But I'm very surprised that they also went, especially when this is supposed to be a historical show, this is supposed to be taking
fiction, Rob.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be taking in the 14th century but we're actually getting into magic and stuff like that. And I feel like that, I thought that was a surprising choice that they made.
Not only getting into it, but like right away, right? Mm-hmm. We have the angel showing up. We have the phallic dragon popping out of the chest. Like all these things are happening. That's not a problem if that's happening. All these things are happening right away, like at the beginning of the show. So it's not only that we're going to run away from that, or we're going to eschew it. We're going to like prominently feature it right away. So, you know, like, hey, by the way, this is what's going down. Like, this is absolutely the show that we're making. There's magic and you're going to have to deal with it. We have some crazy tattooed back lady who has an accent from like 40 different countries popping up, that you're just gonna have to deal with that.
Yeah, you were telling me she's got like a Russian accent, Antonio. She's like a Black Widow type.
It's like a goulash accent. It's just like a mix and amalgam of like 14 different Eastern European bloc countries and maybe a little bit of Russia. I don't know what's going on there, but I wasn't a big fan. I'm poor Katie Seagal. Like I know she had to make a choice and be a little different there, but I mean that it's going to be hard to sustain this accent because it's of indiscernible like. locale. It's just, what was I doing? Was I doing Estonian or was I? No. I mean, where is she with this? I have a real problem with that.
I hear where you're coming from with the fantasy and the magic thing, though, Rob. I mean, Game of Thrones took 10 episodes to really build to that. The weirdest thing about Game of Thrones is that dragons used to exist and sometimes it's winter forever. You know, that was basically the extent of the magic until, you know, the 10th episode of the first season of Game of Thrones when we start to kind of get back into that stuff. And it's been gradually building. And I think you're right that a lot of people, you and I talk about this on the podcast, and I sense it from you a lot, is it's not your favorite part of the show. You like the King's Landing of it all. You like the political stuff. And it looks like that we're getting interesting stuff like that here on The Bastard Executioner, now that Vampire Bill is going to be in a position of power here. I like that. I wrote about it a little bit earlier in the week, and the thing that I said, it's like, it's if Littlefinger became like the king of the land in the first episode. So you've got like that kind of guy who is now in a position of power. I'm interested to follow that, but I do think that we rushed into the fantasy aspect of it really, really fast.
Well, it's weird because the prologue of Game of Thrones is a White Walker executing a member of the Night's Watch and throwing his head and arranging the body in a tableau. And I think we forget about that because we don't then have any of that until, as you're pointing out, Josh, much later in the first season. And I think that the difference here is we not only have the angel at the beginning of the episode, but we have the prophecy restated through Katie Siegel later in the episode. And so there is this seeming undercurrent of this thing that's happened that is driving the action. And if she did murder Mrs. Brattle, it's probably because she wants that outcome. She feels like she has to drive the prophecy somehow. And that's right. Probably why she's done it. So it is not just something that's there that characters are going to have to learn to live with or react to. It is actually what's driving the story. And I do think that that's odd.
You talked about Vampire Bill, Josh. What do you think of Stephen Moyer here?
I love Stephen Moyer. I couldn't get enough Vampire Bill. I want this whole show to be about Vampire
Bill. Okay.
I love Stephen Moyer. Yeah. It's okay. One time I flew to Puerto Rico to interview him as Hurricane Irene was going through Puerto Rico. That's my Stephen Moyer story.
Wow. And how was he?
He was great. It wasn't worth going to Hurricane Irene, Puerto Rico for, but it was great.
Was he scared of the storm?
Yeah, he wasn't having a great time. No one was. We were all not having very fun time. Pretty bad. But I like him here. He's the recognizable face on this show other than Katie Seagal, obviously, and Kurt Sutter, once you recognize that he's the guy underneath all that heavy makeup. I like him. I think he's good. I think he plays a good antagonist. I think on True Blood, we really kind of got, we started with him in a big hero role. He was the hero vampire, and the further along you get, the more bastardized he gets, Vampire Bill. But I like that Stephen Moyer can start from this place where he's antagonistic, because I think he plays that really well. I like this character. I think he's an interesting character, and he's probably my favorite character of the show so far, the Chamberlain.
Yeah. What are you most looking forward to seeing going forward into Bastard Executioner? Anything?
With that guy or just generally?
No, in general.
I don't know. I mean, I'm excited now that Wilkin Brattle is an executioner. I like that we're now at that stage of the game. I think it took a long time for us to get there, and I'm a little curious about why we need all of this backstory going into it. Why we can't just plop in with this guy as an executioner already. But now that we're there, I'm interested to see what that looks like and what sort of form the show takes and how much of it is it the beheading of the week? Is it an ongoing overarching story?
Like a procedural?
Right, yeah, and I'm wondering, I mean, that would be fun. I would be up for a procedural executioner thing. That could be interesting. I have to imagine that there's going to be, some ongoing thing with the prophecy, and I'm less interested in that than I am in, sort of the politics that are going around with the Baron being killed and Wilkin coming in and having this, rivalry with Vampire Bill that we don't know the full extent of. I want to know a little bit more about that. So, I think those are the things that I'm looking forward to the most.
Do you think that based on the opening title sequence of all of the different torture devices that are sort of in the dungeon, which we didn't really get to see in the premiere episode, do you think that week after week after week, it'll be some sort of a new horrific torture that we're going to be doing to somebody, Antonio?
Yeah, I wondered that because Josh pointed out that it could be a procedural. I thought that. I mean, they set up that not only do we have an executioner, but we've got his right-hand man who can also essentially be a bounty hunter. And it sounded to me like that's the role that these roving, traveling executioners would play. But that said, we have these kind of weird things set up. They said the crown is going to send more troops. I don't know much about the rules of Baron succession, but I mean, does the Chamberlain really just automatically inherit the power, going forward? I think there's an issue, and it's mentioned that the Baroness and the Baron have not been able to have children. And the Baroness is still there. And I think she's somewhat of an intriguing character. They set up that she maybe is a little bit more like Margaery from Game of Thrones and that she cares a little bit about the small folk. It's not clear exactly how much or why or what
her... They call her Lady Love. You got to trust Lady Love.
Yeah.
Well, And I mean, she seems to be like the number one, like, she seems to be that she's gonna lock horns, shall we say, with our boy Wilkin Brattle. Like, I think that that's probably a natural pairing that's gonna happen. They met up in the chapel. We saw Vampire Bill having some relations with the French slave boy. So maybe he's not interested in the Baroness. So that's probably not going to be a love triangle. But the Baroness Wilkin Brattle thing could be real. And I think that there is a possibility for an intriguing character there. We did focus on the Baroness a lot. We had scenes of her kind of disappearing into the water. We had scenes of her looking forlornly at her kingdom and wondering what kind of situation she was in. So historically, this does not end well for the small folk. So it will be interesting to see, I think, where she plays into all of that. As far as the torture devices go, I feel like there is this dichotomy where she doesn't seem to be the kind of person who really wants to encourage that, but Vampire Bill seems to be like, hey, whatever it takes. So
right. Well, this is the guy who sentenced his own brother to death, so he's...
That's what I mean. He's ready to roll. Yeah, he's ready to roll.
Heads to roll. So your take is that Lady Love is infertile. You don't think that it was the Baron, and now that Wilkin Brattle's in town, you don't think Wilkin Brattle and Lady Love are going to have a baby, as it seemed to be when they touched each other and there was like some sort of prophecy, hoodoo, voodoo type of stuff.
Brattle's fertile, baby.
My take is that she's not a Baron Baroness. Like, I don't think that that's I don't think that's in play at all. Actually, I thought the first 40 minutes of the show that Vampire Bill was going to end up impregnating her, and then there was going to be this question of whose child is it really, and the Baron's been firing blanks this whole time, and here she gets pregnant. It's a miracle. Well, it's not really a miracle because it's not his. Like, I thought that was going to be the story, but unless she and Wilkin get it on pretty quickly, I think it's going to be clear that it's not the Baron's child. So I don't know where that's going to go.
What was that line that he said after that first scene we saw him with about how it was wasted seeds and he has to walk around with swollen meat? Did you catch that?
Yeah.
I didn't catch
like
that.
Like tainted meat, more like.
Swollen meat!
Yeah. I'm swollen meat!
Oh, the swollen meat is tainted. Don't touch it. Don't touch that stuff.
That sounds not bring taints into this.
That sounds bad. Rob, what do you think of the runtime? Are we going to have super long episodes? Is that where Kurt Sutter is creatively right now, where he's just like, you've given me 2-hour episodes every week on Sons of Anarchy. Every Bastard Executioner is going to be 90 minutes long.
Well, it really just comes down to, I think that the budget here is probably higher than the, you know, average episode of Sons of Anarchy, because I feel like the Sons of Anarchy, you're shooting that in like North Hollywood or wherever they're shooting in. It's like, okay, well, let's just go drive around for a little bit more. And I don't think it's a super expensive show. I'm sure everybody's salary and contract started to get higher as you got towards the end. But this is, you know, every extra bit that you shoot on a show like this has got to be super expensive because of, you know, all the location and the costumes and everything like that. So I would imagine that they're probably going to be much more closer to that traditional runtime than they were in season 7 of the Sons of Anarchy.
You think that they can rein in Kurt Sutter? Is he a guy you rein in?
I heard that there was 20 minutes that were cut out of this 2-hour
premiere. Are you serious?
Yeah.
What?
Oh my God.
Well, it's just so crazy because I mean, if this were an hour pilot, we wouldn't be anywhere close to what the story should be on this. Like, we don't get to him being the Bastard Executioner until very near the end of this first pilot episode. It's 2 hours in and we're finding out the actual ongoing premise of the show. So unless they rein him in, I mean, it seems to be like that. They know what they signed up for, and they signed up for Kurt Sutter going to Kurt Sutter. So I don't know that we're going to be able to get him reined in. I think we're going to have longer episodes. I mean, that's one of the hard barriers for me for finishing Sons. I only watched through like maybe the first 4 seasons of Sons, and it was just like, this is getting too excessive, too much. And we start with that on the show. So it's like, this is where he's at, and this is what they bought. I mean, this is what they wanted.
All right, Josh, is there anything else about the Bastard Executioner, or do you want to hear about what we missed this summer from Antonio?
Yeah, I think just one last thing on the Bastard Executioner I'd just like to get everyone's take on is, so I'm just looking at the ratings, how it did when it premiered. It premiered on Tuesday, this past Tuesday. It says, I'm looking at Deadline.com, 2.1 million total viewers on this thing, which is about on par with the 2.5 that watched, the 2.5 million that watched the Sons of Anarchy premiere in 2008. Do you think that these are good enough numbers for FX? Do you think that this is a show that's going to increase? It's gonna hover. It's gonna decrease. What's your guess on the viewership of this thing and the legs of this thing? I'll start with Antonio.
I don't think it has great legs. I mean, I don't know that the buzz is going to be
great behind.
It's body double.
Yeah, GAM's not so good. The top perfect. But no, I don't know. I don't think it's got a really long tail, so to speak. I don't think anybody watches this premiere and is like, you got to see this show. Like it's crazy. It's like nothing you've ever seen before, or it's so different. It's very derivative and it's very much like a lot of other things you've seen before. If you've seen Braveheart, if you've seen Game of Thrones, if you've even seen Vikings, then you've probably seen a large part of what was in this premiere. And I just don't know you're going to be running out to tell people throughout the season like it's going to grow. That said, you put this first series on a Netflix or on a streaming service, I think that the second season's premiere will be higher than the 2.1 for sure. It's just a question of is FX in that for the long haul. And Rob was already pointing out this is not a cheap show that I'm likely to make. So how much are they really in for? I guess we'll see.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious to know, and I really haven't followed cable ratings particularly close, how the other hits on FX are doing these days in terms of. So that would be a good comparison to see how stuff like The Strain is doing and stuff like that.
Well, but, if you don't talk about The Strain anymore. No.
The Strain is in upstate New York right now.
Yeah.
But that being said, yeah. I just keep going back to, if you're going to be telling your friends like, hey, this show is like Game of Thrones, but you're going to end up saying, I think that not necessarily things that are going to attract people unless they're just like really like into gore. Like it's like Game of Thrones, but it's gorier and also, you know, maybe more confusing in terms of the characters. It's probably not more confusing than Game of Thrones, but I feel like Game of Thrones just got into a lot of this stuff that it does, but I feel like it was more earned in Game of Thrones, where I feel like they're really just throwing you off the boat right from the start with all of the violence here in Bastard Executioner.
Yeah, you going to check out episode 2, Rob?
I probably will not. Unless we're talking about it, I probably will not.
Yeah. Antonio, how about you?
Yeah, I think I'll probably check it out. I don't know if I'll even end up watching the whole thing, but I am a little bit interested to see what the next step for this show is, just because I want to know if it becomes like a procedural, if it becomes like The Highlander, but they're located in this one place and time. Are we going to see an execution of the week? Is that what the show is? And I'd be a little bit intrigued to see how that format would work. So I am going to check out at least one more to see where we go next, but it may not be much more than one more after that. I think, Josh, the point you made about how, and Rob was just talking about how Game of Thrones really gets to that. Like it is a central premise of the Game of Thrones story that's sort of not talked about enough. That magic was once existing in the world and it went away. And what's brought it back? What's precipitated this? This is an underlying question in Game of Thrones. I don't sense that that's the kind of question this show is asking at all. It just threw it in there as this sort of magical realism or magical element. And I think that it's trying to do too many things at once and not doing any of them well as a result.
What do you think the pink dragon is?
Is this off the record? Are we on the record?
No, we're on. We're live. We're live.
I mean, they probably share some sort of weird holy bond that branded them at some point, and that represents something that some divine hand wants in power or wants to move some kind of thing rather than just these people that sit back. That there is some divine hand or great mover who they bought into with their brands and that they're connected in that way. Somehow.
Right. All right. I think we can move on from TBX. Don't you guys think so?
I think so.
All right. Okay. Let's move on from TBX. And Rob, do you want to talk about some TV that you and I have not been able to watch because you and I have been embroiled in a million hours of Survivor this whole summer?
Well, I could, but it probably wouldn't be as interesting as hearing Antonio talk about it because he's the one that actually watched it.
Yeah. So I think what we're setting up here is it was a quiet summer on post show recaps. We had some stuff going on. We had some True Detective podcasts. We had the Stray Wet Hot American summer podcast. We had a few things here and there, but it was fairly quiet just because we were off busy.
Well,
with some
I have
other projects.
Been continuing the Seinfeld rewatch week after week.
How far are you in that? By
we now? Are into season 5 of Seinfeld, but there's still about 2 years remaining in our Seinfeld rewatch.
That's amazing. But we've been a little bit off the air. There's a lot of shows that were happening this summer that we could have been podcasting about and we weren't able to do. So we want to touch on a few of those right around now. And Antonio's going to take the wheel on that.
Yeah, and they're really, I mean, Alan Sepinwall uses the term peak TV all the time. And we're certainly there. We're at a point where it used to be a summer show, maybe was just kind of the throwaway, or networks would burn shows off in the summer. They would air things that didn't work or things that they were contractually obligated to air, but they knew the eyes weren't going to be on the screens. And I think it's just different now. I think now we've got a year-round TV schedule because of services like Netflix and Hulu offering original content, because Amazon's doing it. and cable channels and everybody. I mean, people are starting great shows at different times throughout the year, and summer is no exception. You talked about Wet Hot American Summer First Day Camp. Josh, you and Mike Bloom podcasted about that here on Post Show Recaps. If you're not familiar with Wet Hot, it did drop this summer. They made a prequel series to a cult movie. The cult movie featured famous actors playing people that were way younger than they were. It was already ridiculous. And now they've decided 10 years later to make them even older playing that same people. And it's just outrageous. Paul Rudd is insane. If you haven't seen that, that's definitely something, if you're familiar with the movie, to catch up on. It might be a little too hyped up. I think, Rob, you had some issues with Wet Hot maybe being a little too hyped up for you.
I watched like two or three episodes and I thought it was funny. I don't think I thought it was too hyped up.
Okay. Well, it's not, I mean, don't believe the hype. Like if you're, it's not the greatest thing ever, but
yes,
it is very entertaining.
Believe the hype.
It is day by day. It's your favorite thing ever, Josh.
Day by day.
Yeah. And I think that, Ariel says thumbs up on Wet Hot. It's camp and camp equals fun. Yeah. I think it is camp in both aspects of the word. It is literally at a camp and it's camp. So that's out there. That's something that is on Netflix. Another great thing on Netflix that I'm not even fully finished with, but I'm really getting wrapped up in is Narcos. Have you guys watched any of Narcos yet?
Narco Polo. Yeah, I've heard great things about Narcos. I haven't gotten to see it. Our boy, the Red Viper, is on Narcos.
Yeah, playing a DEA agent. This is like you talk about historical fiction. I mean, it basically is featuring the Medellin cartel with Colombian, like Pablo Escobar and all these people that are hunting them. It's interesting in that it's told largely from Escobar's point of view, which is your kind of standard anti-hero sort of thing that we've seen in other shows like Breaking Bad, etc. However, Pablo Escobar, not a good guy at all, like nothing really redeeming about him. And the story is told in a very straightforward, simple way, but it's done very well. And as a result of being simple and straightforward and done very well, it's very easy to watch and very enjoyable. So that's a really good one to check out if you're into that kind of anti-hero story, or maybe some of these shows that are set in the near recent past. That's really good. You guys haven't checked that out at all.
I haven't checked it out at all. That's really high on my list. I don't know if I'm going to be able to binge the whole thing, but I've got a bunch of friends who've watched it, who loved it, who said it was really, really cool. And I know it got picked up for season two already, I think.
Yeah, it did. And I think that there's a lot of this story to tell, obviously. And you could continue, and you don't have to focus on Escobar the whole time. There are obviously many other stories to be told.
How's Vinny chasing it?
He should have stuck with Aquaman, I think, is really what it comes down to. But no, it's a good show. I mean, everybody in it is doing a very simple kind of thing, and they're doing it very well. So that's worth checking out. Rob, I'm interested to know, are you watching Review Season 2?
No, you know, I heard that it was good and not better than season one. That came to me from Akiva. I asked him, how is Review Season 2? He said it was good still, but not better than season one. Did not match those highest highs.
Can you guys set up what Review is? Because I've only heard about this passingly from both of you.
Yeah, I mean, I can. Or Rob, if you'd like to, go for it.
Review is the story of Forrest. What is his last name?
McNeil.
Forrest McNeil. And Josh, much like you, he is a reviewer, but not of TV shows or movies. He reviews things about life.
Oh, so he's a real journalist.
Well, not exactly. Yeah. Like, he reviews things like stealing or reviews like cheating on your spouse, things like that. And so he gives it that, or he reviewed racism one time. And so,
what does that entail? How do you review racism?
He said, "Went and
just
said,
saying it's bad." Blanket.
No, he goes out and actually tries these things. So he went out and I believe he made offensive comments to people and then like got punched in the face and stuff like that. And so he gave racism, I believe, half a star, the lowest rating that you could give.
That sounds accurate.
So in each episode, at least through season one, there were three different things that he would review. And it's sort of like after an episode or two, you're like, okay, you know, I get this show. But what ends up happening is that it's not like a traditional sort of multicam sitcom. Like, the storyline continues. So like stuff that happened to him, like there are repercussions of things that he did from earlier episodes that have effects on his life going forward, and really begins to take a toll on him, all these things. Because the audience submits, hey, we want you to go review blah, blah, blah. We want you to review, whatever. Like, you know, drunk driving, for instance, would be, like, I don't think that was one of the things. But so he's like, well, I don't really want to do it, but I guess I have to go out there and try this. And,
sounds like an awful job.
Yeah, no, it really is.
Seriously, though, Forrest McNeil takes it very seriously. He has so much integrity that he puts himself repeatedly in harm's way. I won't spoil it, but the joke, the first review of season two is literally the most ridiculous review that they did, that they've ever done. And it is probably not even close to the most ridiculous review in season two, where they go with it. It is unbelievable what happens. My jaw was on the floor immediately from the beginning of this season. And the show is very meta. It's interesting. It's an exercise in kabuki theater to some point, because Rob's right. Like, the actions do have consequences, and they weigh on this guy. And he's like, well, got to stick with it. You know, got to keep doing it. I don't care if my marriage is falling apart and my kid hates me. Like, this is what, got to do the job, you know. And his view is, like, if even one viewer sees the experience that he had and decides that racism isn't for them, then he did a good job.
And
like,
it was worth doing.
It was worth doing it because he had an impact on society.
No, Josh, so it's a really fast watch. You know, there's like nine episodes. There's like nine episodes and they're like 22 minutes. You can watch them on Hulu. Is season two on Hulu also?
That's a good question. I don't know about that. I think the Comedy Central had it behind some kind of paywall, at least initially. But they will make it available, obviously, on these services relatively quickly, because it's a show that they want people to pick up on, and it does benefit from a binge because you do see these consequences in real time. And you remember two episodes ago, he shot an arrow at his secretary because he had to do a William Tell. And, you know, now this secretary is, yeah, this is happening as a result. So that builds that. And there's another angle. The producer of his TV show that he's making really wants to punish him, it seems like, because it makes for good TV. So there is sort of this meta commentary.
He's on a tortured things. Guy, Josh.
Yeah. There's sort of meta commentary on the things we subject people to for our entertainment and for our sort of illumination on these subjects. So it's really, really well done. It's so smart because it does continue the story. So you're like, wow, I didn't even think that this could go there. And there's just some ridiculous things that happen as part of this, a part of these reviews. A lot of it's improvised. The lead star is Andy Daly, who is a comedian, especially known for his long-form improvisational characters on things like Comedy Bang Bang. He was also the principal on Eastbound and Down, Cutler. So if you remember that show, Principal Cutler really just gets off the rails pretty quickly because of his interactions with Kenny. So Andy Daly has this madness in him, and Forrest taps into it like right away. If you watch the first episode, I believe one of his reviews in season one is to review cocaine or using cocaine or something like that. And he, speaking of rails,
he likes it.
He loves it. Can you spoil the rating? How many stars did he give that?
I think he gives it like 3 out of 5. Because like, he gets really good.
He gets really into it.
Really crazy. And you realize, like, I don't think it's the last review in the episode, and you realize when he's doing the third review that he is coked out of his brains because he's still suffering from the second review.
So I want to say, I think that he has to go to the prom. I think that he's somebody's prom date after that.
Yeah.
And he's still doing coke.
Oh my God. Season two is still airing. It's been airing this summer. It is way farther than anything that happened in season one. And there, you get the feeling that there is more of a build. I think there's some really good moments in season one where you're like, okay, where is this going to lead to? And then you're following for the payoff. But in season two, it's just this incessant, like, drumbeat of all these horrible things that keep happening as a result of these reviews. And he has just gone down, 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 downhill. And so you're hoping for a light at the end of the tunnel. And it'll be interesting to see where season two ends up and whether Akiva's rating, Rob, at the end of season two will be, you know what, it was better in some.
Yeah.
Like, the sum was better than, you know, the sum of the parts or whatever. So that's a show that's been going on this summer, and it's definitely worth looking into if you guys haven't checked out.
Yeah, I had so much fun binging it. I watched it over Christmas. Akiva recommended it, that he said that he was going to give any of the listeners that watched the whole season one and didn't like it, he was going to give them like $1.09 or something like that. So I told him I would watch it, and I binge watched the whole season. I looked forward to it so much, I couldn't put it down. And I thought I'd like to watch the second season.
Nice.
Yeah. definitely worth checking out. Another thing that I'm really enjoying that's still airing, and we don't have to spend a ton of time on this, but I wanted to mention Rick and Morty season 2 is airing right now. Rick and Morty, a really fun show. Who do we know about Rick
Ryan
and Morty?
Ryan Elder, the composer for Rick and Morty.
That's right. And Rick and Morty has great music on it. If you're not familiar with Rick and Morty, it is a sort of a sci-fi cartoon, if you will. It sounds like the sort of premise that you'd be like, well, I reject that out of hand. But
I watched the first episode today because I knew you were going to bring it up, and it killed me. I thought it was incredible. It's basically just like bad version of Back to the Future. It's like Back to the Future gone wrong.
Yeah, in a little bit, because the doc in that case is Rick, and Rick is this, his grandson is Morty, and Rick is this kind of mad scientist who has these crazy abilities that he's developed, and he needs a sidekick for many reasons. He's emotionally broken. He's an alcoholic. He can't get himself out of a lot of the jams he gets himself into. And you also get a sense that he just wants somebody to witness all of the crazy things that he's done. And so he gets Morty involved. Poor Morty's in over his head most of the time. You've got voice actors.
He just always calls him, Morty! Yeah. We gotta go to the future, Morty!
Yeah, Morty. Come on, Morty. You know, and he's always burping and throwing up, and he's ridiculous. But
that's not just a first episode thing. He's just a lush.
He's just a lush, and he's got a lot of problems. And the show came out of, I believe, Channel 101, which is a thing that Dan Harmon's been involved in for a very long time. Dan Harmon, the creator of Community. And Dan Harmon was involved with that when he first moved to Los Angeles. And as I understand it, Channel 101 is this great kind of collective of people who make sort of shorts, and they submit them on a month-to-month basis. And then people that are viewing Channel 101, they at the events, they vote on which show should be renewed, which show should come back next month. And the lowest rated show is done. It no more Channel 101 for that show. And so I believe Rick and Morty was sort of born out of that kind of collective. And Dan Harmon is involved with it. If you know Dan Harmon at all, there's a little bit of Dan Harmon in Rick. There's a little bit of this narcissistic genius that comes off in Rick. And it's just really funny. The Back to the Future thing is real. There's a lot of poignancy to it. It's just a really, really, really well-made show.
I like Chris Parnell as the voice of the dad.
I was going to say, great. Chris Parnell is the secret star of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That character, Jerry, is just such a milquetoast, weak man, and it's funny how that all plays out.
He's one of my favorites on 30 Rock. He killed me on 30. He was never really like one of my favorite guys on SNL, but I loved him every time he came up on 30 Rock.
Yeah, he's very funny. He's very good.
He's just really good, and he's great in Rick and Morty. There's a lot of good guest stars that you'll see. Obviously, with Dan Harmon's connections, you're gonna recognize a lot of the voices that you hear on a week-to-week thing. But the show's really, I mean, it just does good work every week, it seems like. And I think a lot of people are buying into it. That one is still airing currently on Adult Swim on the Cartoon Network, so definitely worth checking out. One that is done, and maybe forever, is Hannibal. Hannibal season 3 wrapped up this summer.
I was a bad Hannibal this summer.
You didn't. So where are you with Hannibal season 3?
I'm not quite halfway into season 3 of Hannibal. I love this show. Hannibal's one of those shows that we were constantly trying to figure out how we could do regular coverage on post-show recaps. And it wasn't for like want of people who wanted to talk about it. A lot of people who are in the circuit really loved this show, and we just were never able to really make it work. Hannibal was awesome. It was so disgusting. That was the grossest show. You know, that's the real argument against like only an HBO can get away with being so, so nasty. Hannibal's the grossest show I've ever seen on television. The things that they do with violence is out of this world. It's absolutely disgusting. And I loved it, and I missed it this season, and it does look like it's probably done. I know that Brian Fuller, the guy who's the showrunner behind it, wants to make a movie, wants to assemble all the people, wants to get them all back together. I would bet it doesn't happen. I know a lot of people wanted to see it on Netflix, wanted to see it on Hulu or on Amazon. No one bit. I think that we're probably done with it. I'm curious to see how it wrapped up. I know a lot of people seem to be pretty happy with it.
Yeah, it's interesting because they're borrowing from Thomas Harris' extensive source material with this character. So you've got the Red Dragon storyline, you've got the Hannibal storyline. You've got the Pink Dragon storyline, which is cut. I think that was circumcised from the series.
Oh, stop it!
Are we off the record? It does.
No.
So at any rate, I went full bloom. I apologize. At any rate, It is something that happens. But no, they have the source material, but they don't have, as far as I understand it, they don't have the rights to Silence of the Lambs, which is of course like the Hannibal story that everyone's familiar with. And so I think they had some hope that after about four or five seasons, they could get to a point where they could make a deal for those story rights. But they went through essentially everything. And really, they had a really good time this season because they get into the Red Dragon storyline. And I think that that's one, if you remember some of the people that were involved with it or how that plays out, there's a lot of good drama there. They do a really bang-up job with it. But Josh, you're right on. To anyone who hasn't seen Hannibal, it's terrifying. It is terrifying.
So horrifying.
The lead character, Will Graham, is this sort of empath, this person who can understand how killers think. He can literally put himself inside the mind of a crazy serial killer, and that leads to some bad consequences for him. But where it plays out on TV is we see these murders happening as though he's the killer, and it is brutal. The first 10 minutes of the first episode is like one of the scariest things I've ever seen on TV, period. And the show doesn't dial it back from there. If anything, they go farther. And it's really an interesting show artistically for that reason. And that's, I cannot believe it was on NBC. I'm not surprised.
For as long as it was, too.
Yeah, three seasons. So Hannibal season three, still up to the standards of Hannibal. Still very, very good. It will be there waiting for you, Josh, when you want to catch it.
Rob, have you ever checked it out? Have you ever watched Hannibal?
Yeah, I've seen the premiere of the pilot of Hannibal. And it's very well done. It's just something that I never had time to get in the rotation.
It's not, it's like not an iPhone show. It's one of those things where you can't just be doing something else while you're watching. You have to be fully devoted to Hannibal. It's really complicated. The storylines really are very tightly weaved together. They don't really spoon feed you anything. You have to be paying attention. You have to remember stuff. It's really smart. It's such a good show. That's the one this summer that I'm really bummed that I didn't keep up with.
I got another one for you, Josh. This is the last one, and I think you'd be most bummed about not keeping up with this one. I've seen it a lot in the chat room. Scott St. Pierre has been talking about it throughout
the Strain season two.
No, stop!
It is the Strain season two.
No.
I'm talking about Mr. Robot. Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
Where are we on Mr. Robot? Have you guys watched any of it?
Rob, have you watched any Mr. Robot?
The series formerly known as... I have not seen it. I heard it's incredible. Everybody that I've ever heard have said it's great.
I watched the first episode today again because, Antonio, I knew you were going to talk about it. And within the first 5 seconds of watching, I was like, oh, well, I screwed up pretty hard this summer. I should have been watching Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
You're really doing a public service. We all enjoyed what your dedication to Survivor was. The good news is TV shows don't disappear once they air, once they're made. So.
But I feel like I missed a moment. There was a moment. This summer was the summer of Mr. Robot, and I completely snoozed on it. I snoozed on Mr. Robot. It was great, and I'm a huge 24 fan. I love Alias. There's something about both of those shows. I feel like there's a spirit of that in Mr. Robot. What's the name of the main character? Remy Malek?
Yeah, Remy Malek.
Yes, that's the name of the actor. He's not my favorite actor normally. He's perfect for this character who's just a little off kilter, questionable if he's schizophrenic. He has a little bit of a drug problem, and he's super, super, super into hacking and computers, and he's incredible. He was amazing. I loved that first episode. It sucked me in immediately.
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, but that's the great thing about what we're doing, that at some point, whenever we have a week where we say, okay, well, we don't have anything, that'll be the go-to.
Yeah, Mr. Robot will just slowly chip away at Mr. Robot.
Well, we can catch up. Okay.
Yeah, but it is, I mean, it will be there waiting for you. Try not to get spoiled. There are some, actually, some things that I feel like they want to be plot twists, and then there's some things that they don't. Like, there's some things that I feel like they're pretty clear about establishing, as Josh, as you were saying, that the lead character has some psychological issues. I don't think anybody, even 10 minutes into the character himself, expresses it to another character right away.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how that plays out. He's a little bit like Dexter in that he likes to hack people and then keep little slides of his hacks. He keeps records of them. That does come into play throughout the show. He relates to other people, not through talking to them or through relating to them, but he relates to them by involving himself in their lives and by putting himself, by seating himself in how they go about their lives. Who do they email? What websites do they use? What do they do? And he finds out more about humans and the human condition and people by how they live their lives in quiet and quietly and in private than they ever would representing themselves to him. And I think the show is very interesting on that level. It is a little bit of Fight Club. It is a little bit of The Matrix. It is a little bit of some of these other things, but it's a lot of its own thing. And I think that more than anything, the show's so well made and really just well conceived by the creator, Sam Esmail, that I think that it really is its own thing. And I think that it strives to be its own thing, and it really succeeds at that. I think that what we've got, and they do a really bang-up job, honestly, throughout the first season, and I'm not spoiling anything here. By the end of the first season, you're like, okay, I know where season two is going to go. Like, I know how this is going to end up. And it's not in a way where you're really angry that you don't know where season two, that you know where season two is going to go, because they don't answer things from season one. You do get a lot of resolution to things that have happened, but it also does a really great job of setting up, wow, I can't wait to see season two of this show. So good on them. Good on the people behind Mr. Robot. The soundtrack.
I love how you say it. I love how you say Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot. Good on the people behind Mr. Robot.
Not a Mr. Robot.
It's really well done. It's really, really, really well done.
All right. Next week, what are we talking about, Josh?
Oh, man. Next week, we are going to talk about a show that none of us have seen in a long time, a show that many of us have seen before, a show that is coming back. We're going to talk some heroes next week.
Reborn!
You're going to have to get some horn-rimmed glasses by next week, Rob. I think everyone on the panel has to have some HRGs.
HRG. I'm going to dress like the cheerleader next week.
You're going to be the cheerleader?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Heroes Reborn returning. I believe it's next Thursday as Heroes comes back.
I believe so. Thursday night.
Yeah, Thursday night. So we'll be back here on Friday next week. We'll talk some Heroes. I'm really pumped for Heroes to come back. And I know when Heroes Reborn was announced, I was very skeptical. I think that, like a lot of people who loved Heroes in the first season, maybe it hits a wall a little bit the further along it gets. But I'm starting to feel some Heroes nostalgia. You know, seeing the commercials with Mohinder Suresh and Matt Parkman in the mix and Hiro Nakamura, I'm excited to check in on these people.
I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me over the past 6 months saying, if you need anybody for a Heroes podcast, let me know.
Yeah.
People are pumped up for the return of Heroes.
Everyone wants to talk Heroes. And so we'll talk Heroes next week. We'll see how that premiere is. It's a lot of new cast members. It's going to be a new story. I know that Tim Kring, the guy who's the creator of the show, he's described Heroes Reborn as, I think he's called it like season 10. It's not just, you know, season 5 after season 4 ended and now we're going right back into it. All of the time that the show has been off the air, they're going to account for. They're going to pretend like those stories were still happening. All of that was happening all of these years later. So we're going to get into that. I'm excited. I think it'll be fun. Or it might suck, but that could be fun too. We'll see how it goes. I'm looking forward to talking about it next week.
How long is the first episode? Is it 1 hour, 2 hours?
I don't know off the top of my head.
They're going to stutter it?
I don't think they're going to stutter it.
Scott St. Pierre,
7 hours.
7 hours of Heroes Reborn. No, I think Scott St. Pierre says 2 hours. I believe Scott St. Pierre. Wow. 2 hours seems about right for the return of Heroes.
The return of Heroes. Okay. We will see what happens next week. Okay. Well, so we're going to do the show again live next Friday afternoon. So probably around the same time slot, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific?
4 p.m. Eastern. That works for me.
We'll let you guys know if there's any changes to the schedule. We will also be working on a name for the show because next week is the first real episode.
Right. This was episode 0.
Yeah.
Not a bad trial run. This is good.
Also, let us know your comments if you have any feedback about the test show on postshowrecaps.com.
Yeah. Do you have a hashtag for this week?
We got a couple of options here.
Oh, no.
Okay. We have Baron Baroness. Uh-huh. That was pretty good. We have Dirt Sutter.
Yeah, I figured that'd be in the mix.
We have, of course, Pink Dragon.
I feel like that might be the winner, right?
Did we search to make sure that hasn't been used before? I'm a little Pink nervous Dragon? About that.
Antonio might have taken it too far that people are uncomfortable about tweeting about it.
I don't remember being the one who first said Pink Dragon.
I was the one who first said Pink Dragon, but you did take it to a place.
Yeah, I did.
You brought him.
I needed to be more circumspect.
Brought him to the moil.
All right. What's the vote here?
I feel like we should go with Dirt Sutter. I feel like that sums up the bulk of what we talked about.
All right, fair enough. All right, Dirt Sutter it is. Anything else? Any other final thoughts here as we start to wrap this up?
No, this was fun. I had a good time.
Good. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, this is good.
All right. So we'll be back 1 week from now. If you're not subscribed to Post Show Recaps, you could do that right now. PostShowRecaps.com/iTunes. We also appreciate your feedback and ratings there. And of course, visit us anytime at postshowrecaps.com and see what we've got going on, talking about all sorts of different TV shows. Hope you come and check it out. And this was a lot of fun, gentlemen. Great show zero.
Great show zero. Zero's reborn.
Zero's not that. That's the show.
That's me and Antonio. We've merged.
All right. Take care, everybody. Bye.